Several man-sized tornadoes spiraled and danced around the room, threatening to knock Cleo off balance if she came too close to them. Air magic, she thought. The air kindred was playing with his magic to create yet more obstacles. She looked ahead to see that the aisle that led to the dais was lined with blue fire, courtesy of the fire kindred himself. Kyan sat upon the vine-covered throne, with Taran at his right and Olivia at his left. Cleo's fury peaked when she saw that he'd found her father's golden crown and placed it upon his head, just as King Gaius had done when he'd taken over. "And here she is," Kyan said without rising. "I was worried about you, little queen, running away like that with no warning. Rather rude, really. And all I'd wanted to do was help you." "I guess I am rude. My deepest apologies for offending you."
"Ah, you say that, but I know you don't mean it. What do you think, Taran? You know, this little queen was quite enamored with your vessel's twin brother. I think she would have married him, despite his low social ranking as a mere palace guard."
"I'm surprised," Taran replied. "My memories of Theon show that he much preferred tall brunettes, not short blondes.
But she is a princess. That excuses a myriad of shortcomings."
Kyan grinned.
"Shortcomings? Because she's short? I am very funny. But so is Nick. Right, little queen? He always made you laugh."
Again, a sheet of ice formed beneath her feet, triggered by her rising fury.
"How sweet," Olivia said. "She's trying to access the water magic inside of her."
"Oh, yes," Kyan said, clapping his hands and laughing. "Let's see you try. Go on, little queen. We're watching."
And she did. Cleo tried so hard to harness the magic within her, to freeze the room solid like she'd frozen the guard, to make the three monsters on the dais choke and sputter on a magical lungful of water, like she'd done to Amara the night of the first ritual. Cleo thought that perhaps, with this ring on her finger, she might have a chance to control this, to end it. But she couldn't. This magic wasn't hers to yield, not in any way she could control. The sound within her of the water kindred's laugh only made her angrier and more frightened than she already was.
"Now," Kyan said after he sobered. "Little sorceress, shall we begin?"
Lucia stepped forward.
"I don't have the aquamarine orb."
"She keeps it in a velvet pouch in her pocket," Taran said. Kyan glared at him.
"And you only mention that now?"
He shrugged.
"My memories are improving. Yesterday was a bit of a blur, to be honest. This vessel fought hard to retain control."
"But he lost," Olivia said.
"Just as the princess will."
Cleo clasped her hands in front of her, keeping the ring covered from view.
"Will I? Are you sure about that?"
Olivia smiled thinly.
"Yes, I'm sure."
"Give us the orb," Kyan said. "It must now join the others." He gestured to a long table to their left. It was adorned with a blue velvet cloth, the backdrop for three crystal orbs. Cleo turned a glare toward Lucia. Lucia shrugged.
"He asked. I delivered."
Cleo shook her head.
"I will give you the orb, Kyan. But I demand to see Lyssa first."
"Ah, yes, Lyssa," Kyan said evenly.
"The sweet little missing baby that I kidnapped from a sweet little nursery, leaving the sweet little nursemaid in ashes. That was so unkind of me, wasn't it?"
Cleo watched him carefully, every gesture, every look.
"Incredibly so," Olivia agreed. "But an excellent way to ensure the sorceress's commitment to the cause," Taran said. "You are very smart to think of it, Kyan."
"Indeed I was."
There was something off about their delivery of this,
as if they were mocking her.
You don't have her, Cleo guessed. Do you?
Kyan's smile fell.
Of course I do. Then prove it.
His eyes narrowed.
Or what? Or? I won't cooperate. I won't give you the orb, and you won't be able to do the ritual properly this time.
Kyan sighed and pressed back into the throne, running a hand through his carrot-orange hair.
Taryn!
Taryn waved his hand, and a strong gust of wind hit Cleo, wrapping itself around her like a large, hungry snake. She watched with horror, unable to do anything to stop it, as the velvet pouch exited her pocket, sailed through the air, and landed in Kyan's waiting hand. He undid the drawstrings and looked inside.
Excellent. Over to you, little sorceress.
He tossed it to Lucia, who pulled the orb out and placed it next to the others, exchanging a brief, pained glance with Cleo. Four orbs, all ready to be used in the ritual that would solidify the kindred's existence here in this world and strengthen their power to the point where they could destroy the world with a thought. Or four orbs ready to be destroyed, which would very likely kill Cleo, Nick, Taryn, and Olivia. For all Cleo had envied Lucia for her magic, she didn't envy her current choice.
I think it was a good idea to come here,
Kyan said, gazing around at the overgrown throne room that smelled of fresh life and acrid fire.
It has a sense of history, of eternity. Perhaps it's all the marble.
I like it too, Taryn agreed.
We should reside here indefinitely.
Olivia trailed her fingertips along the edge of the throne.
Oh, I don't know. I think I prefer Lemeros. All of that delicious ice and snow. Princess Cleo, you would do well there once my sibling takes over. Ice and snow is only water, isn't it? Perhaps you could form a palace of ice. Only if I could crush you underneath it,
Cleo replied. Lucia snorted, but covered the sound with a cough.
Oh, I don't know, another voice came from the throne room's entryway. The princess doesn't favor the Lemurian climate. She does look incredibly beautiful in the fur-lined cloaks, but she's an Iranian girl through and through.
Cleo spun around to face him. Magnus leaned against the mossy doorframe, as if he'd been there all the time without a care in the world. He pushed away and took several steps inside the room.
I've come to negotiate a truce, Magnus said. One in which we are left in peace, and the kindred are sent directly to the Darklands.
Chapter 31 Lucia Uranus. Clearly, her brother had lost his mind. Lucia didn't need this further complication added to an already impossible situation, but Magnus was here anyway. While Kyan had taunted Cleo, Lucia had been studying the crystal orbs, trying to figure out how best to break them. Anything she thought of, blunt force, dropping them onto a clear area of marble on the now overgrown floor, seemed too expected, too easy. Cleo had already said that Magnus had tried to break the aquamarine orb and failed. This would need something special, something powerful. But what? And even if she could figure it out in time, the more she considered it, the more she feared she'd been right about the effect on the kindred's mortal vessels. She'd watched Kyan's monstrous, fiery form shatter like glass. He still hadn't recovered from that. Cleo was right. The fire kindred was currently vulnerable until Lucia performed the ritual. But if she destroyed him, she'd destroy four people whose lives she valued. And she might never find Lyssa again. She could try to imprison them, but it would be slow, painful, and with an uncertain outcome. And she could only try to focus on one kindred at a time. The others would stop her. Lucia turned toward Magnus as he approached.
What are you doing here?
She snarled at him. He nodded at her.
Lovely to see you too. Beautiful day, isn't it?
You shouldn't be here.
Magnus hadn't arrived alone. Prince Asher entered the throne room right behind him. He gazed around at its new decor.
Very nice, Asher said, nodding. It reminds me of home.
Lovely Croatia, Magnus replied. I mean to visit the jewel someday.
You should, Asher agreed.
Despite the current corrupt government led by my black-hearted sister, it's the most beautiful place in this world. I would argue that Lemeros is, but I'd like to see for myself.
Magnus then turned toward Cleo. Despite his calm demeanor, there was a storm brewing in his brown eyes.
I got your note. I hope you don't mind that I came after you anyway.
Cleo's expression was tense.
I mind.
I figured you would.
He looked up at Kain and the others.
And here you are, seated upon a throne that far better men than you have possessed. And quite frankly, I include my father in that statement.
Kain smiled down at him.
I do enjoy your sense of humor.
You are one of the few who do.
Kain,
Lysia said, stepping forward. She had to do something, say something, to keep this from getting worse than it already was.
Spare my brother. Let him leave here without harm. He doesn't know what he's doing. Oh, I disagree.
Kyan's smile only grew wider. A line of blue fire ignited in front of him, zipped down the stairs, and formed a shallow circle around Magnus and Asher.
I think he knows exactly what he's doing. Don't you, little prince?
Magnus eyed the blue flames uneasily.
I'd really prefer that you never call me that again.
But it suits you,
Kyan replied.
A little prince. One who marches in to save his little queen like the hero you aren't and will never be.
Your princess is lost to you, little prince. She belongs to us now.
The flames rose to knee level.
Stop, Lucia hissed. If you hurt my brother, I swear I won't help you.
But what about Lyssa?
Kyan asked evenly.
Lucia, it's a bluff,
Cleo told her.
He doesn't have her, I'm sure of it now. She wasn't at the temple last night, and Nick hasn't seen her. He didn't know anything about the kidnapping.
Lucia's breath left her as she considered this possibility. If Kyan didn't have her daughter, who did? A thought occurred to her then, one that hadn't even entered her mind until this very moment. Amara. It could have been Amara, using the chaos surrounding the king's assassination to kidnap her daughter.
Oh, goddess, she couldn't think about this now. Surely she would go mad.
No, she had to stay focused or everything, absolutely everything would be lost, including Lyssa. Kyan stood up from the throne and descended the stairs. He stood in front of Magnus, studying him carefully.
How did you get past the gates?
He asked.
There are other entrances into the city,
Magnus replied.
What? You think there's only one way in, one way out? That's not how a city like this works. There are books about this in the library. Perhaps you'd like to borrow a few and read up on the subject.
Kyan narrowed his eyes.
Did you come here to sacrifice yourself to save the girl you love?
No,
Magnus said.
In fact, I'm very much counting on us both walking out of here alive and well. I believe she's promised me another wedding very soon, and I intend to hold her to it.
Kyan glanced at Cleo.
But you know the hard truth that your husband does not. There will be no happy ending for you, either of you.
Lucia fully expected Cleo to break down, to start to cry and beg for her life and Magnus's. But instead, she watched the princess's expression harden.
Wrong, Cleo said. There will be no happy ending for you, Kyan. Today is the last day you will have the privilege of walking this world, a world that you could have embraced rather than tortured, one you could have helped rather than hurt. And here we are.
Yes, here we are, Kyan repeated, nodding.
Then he shot a look at Lucia. Start the ritual now.
We need to wait for the water kindred to fully take control, Lucia lied.
Although she honestly didn't know for sure whether it was a lie or not. She'd never done this ritual before, never wanted to do it. She only knew the steps because Kyan had described them to her. The ritual needed her blood and the blood of an immortal, Olivia's blood, which is what her grandmother had used during the last ritual at Amara's compound, combined. The orbs would react to it, even without the wisp of kindred magic within. More proof that the orbs were more than prisons. Magic. Pure magic.
How long must we wait? Kyan hissed.
I don't know, Lucia replied. Perhaps this will help speed things along.
He gestured toward Taryn, who came down the stairs, grabbed hold of Cleo's hand, and wrenched the amethyst ring off her finger. Cleo gasped. Lucia turned to Kyan, clenching her fists at her side to stop herself from lunging at him.
Don't push me, little sorceress!
Kyan hissed. His eyes were glowing, a striking blue color that matched the flames.
Oh, you will be very sorry you did!
The fire surrounding Magnus rose higher, to his waist now, and the fire kindred turned a cold smile toward her brother.
Do you feel that? He asked. My fire burns brighter and hotter than any other.
Do you feel this? Magnus asked.
Then his hand shot out and he grabbed Kyan by his throat.
That's the bloodstone my father gave me to save my life. It's full of death magic, and it has a rather interesting effect on people I hate. I think you felt it once before. Let me show you what it can do.
Kyan scratched at his hands, but didn't succeed in breaking free. The skin at his throat where Magnus clutched him had started to turn a sickly gray color. Lucia watched this unfold in shock. She'd known Magnus's ring contained death magic, but she didn't think that it might affect Kyan.
Apologies, Nick, Magnus growled. But this has to happen.
Kyan began to shake, and his eyes rolled back into his head. Olivia had descended the stairs to stand next to Taryn, but neither of them made a single move to stop Magnus. Lucia didn't understand why. They could stop him so easily. She shot a worried glance over to Cleo, and the girl didn't appear at all surprised by what Magnus was doing. Had her brother tried to kill someone with this death magic before today? The next moment, the ring of fire extinguished around both Magnus and Asher.
Don't kill him!
Asher snarled, just as Kyan fell to his knees. Magnus pulled his hand away, glaring at the Kreshian prince over his shoulder.
You broke my concentration.
You promised me that you wouldn't kill him.
Some promises were meant to be broken, Magnus snapped. Nick would understand.
Kyan hissed out a breath as he collapsed to the floor. Magnus nudged him with the toe of his boot.
It doesn't look nearly as bad as Curtis did. Much less dead.
Lucia shook her head.
Oh, Magnus. Do you even know what you've done?
Yes. I stopped the bad guy.
Then Magnus eyed the other two kindred, who were observing silently from a dozen paces away.
Don't come a step closer, or you'll get the same.
Lucia held her breath as she watched the red wisp of fire magic rise from Nick's unconscious body. Then that wisp of magic swirled around Magnus for a moment, before it morphed into a ball of fire and shot into his chest. He jumped as if he'd been struck by lightning, then doubled over, bracing his hands on his knees, gasping for breath. In a single motion, Magnus then pulled the golden ring off his finger and threw it to the mossy floor. Then slowly, very slowly, he straightened up, squared his shoulders, and swept his gaze around the throne room. Lucia's heart stopped at the sight of the fire magic mark now on the palm of Magnus's ringless left hand.
Yes,
Kyan now spoke with Magnus's familiar deep voice.
I like this vessel very much.
No!
Cleo cried out.
No! You can't do this!
I didn't do anything.
Kyan walked over toward her, then hunched down so he could level his eyes with hers.
The little prince did this, because he thought he was smart, that he was the hero. He thought he would save his beautiful bride and all her friends. He should have stayed in the shadows where he belonged.
"Get out of him right now," Cleo snarled.
When Kyan smirked, it was Magnus's smirk. Lucia's heart sank at the sight.
"No. In fact, I think I'll keep this vessel for all eternity."
Out of the corner of her eye, Lucia saw Asher move to Nick's side, where the prince pressed his fingers against the young man's throat.
"Is it dead?" she asked.
"No. Not yet, anyway."
Asher scowled at her.
"This is your fault. I blame you for all of this."
"You're right," she replied. "It is my fault."
Confusion crossed Asher's expression. Perhaps he'd expected her to argue with him.
"Kyan,"
Lucia said, and her brother turned to face her. She swallowed hard.
"I will begin the ritual now."
"Good," he said with a nod. "And here I thought you might give me more of a problem than you already have."
"Why would I? You have everything that I care about at your mercy. My daughter, my brother, my..."
She frowned.
"Well, that's about it, really."
He raised a dark brow.
"No more tricks."
"I'm finished fighting," she said,
and it felt as honest as anything else she'd said that day.
"Now I just want this to be over."
"This is your destiny,"
Olivia said, nodding.
"You should take pride in this, Lucia."
"You will be well rewarded,"
Taryn added. Lucia cast a glance at Cleo, who watched the Fire Kindred's every step, every movement.
"She's searching for some small sign that Magnus is still here with us,"
Lucia thought.
"She still has hope."
However, Lucia wasn't as optimistic. Lucia moved behind the table that bore the four crystal orbs, aquamarine, obsidian, amber, and moonstone. Olivia stepped forward and presented Lucia with her bare forearm. With a small blade Lucia kept in the pocket of her cloak, she sliced a shallow cut into Olivia's perfect dark skin. Blood welled to the surface and then dripped onto each of the four orbs. Even without any words spoken or any specific magic focused toward them, the orbs began to glow with a soft inner light. Olivia nodded, then backed away. All eyes were on the glowing orbs. Lucia considered her next step as she held the blade against her own skin. Follow through with the ritual as Kyan had described it to her?
Magnus. He stole Magnus. Her brother, her best friend. She'd failed him again.
No. She forced herself not to despair, not to dwell on what had already happened.
How could she do this? To hand Kyan so much power to ensure his hold upon her brother's body.
But she couldn't figure out how to break the orbs. She could try, but if she failed, the ramifications would be catastrophic. Before she could decide whether to bleed or not to bleed, an arm came around her from behind, yanking her back against a firm chest, the tip of a blade pressed against her throat.
"I'm not dead, in case you are curious,"
Jonas whispered.
"Jonas,"
she managed. Kyan, Taryn, and Olivia stepped forward, but Lucia held up her hand to stop them from doing anything rash. No one had seen the rebels approach through the overgrown vine-covered throne room. They'd all been watching the orbs, watching the blade at Lucia's arm. Lucia would have been impressed by the rebel's surprising stealth if this hadn't been the worst possible time he could have arrived.
"Let go of me," she urged. "I believed in you, and you betrayed me,"
Jonas growled.
"I would have given you all of my magic if you'd asked me for it. Hell, I would have offered it to you if you'd given me half a chance. Now I'm in a difficult spot, princess."
Lucia didn't move, barely breathed.
"Is that so?"
She'd wanted a way to delay the inevitable, and it seemed as if she now had a very good one.
No, Kyan said. "I'd appreciate very much if you'd step away from my sorceress before I have to make you."
Jonas hesitated for a second.
"Magnus?"
Not exactly, Kyan said, smiling his stolen smile.
I think I remember you. Yes, a beautiful day in a Pelsian market. A lovely girl got in the way of my fire and your body.
Jonas stiffened.
Kyan.
Kyan nodded.
There you go. I'm sure more memories will come to me from this vessel. You've met before, many times.
I will kill you, Jonas said.
I doubt that very much.
Stop it, Lucia thought, hoping very much this strange telepathy still worked between them.
Stop baiting him, or you're going to die. Do you want that?
Jonas froze.
I can still hear you. I wondered if I could after all the magic you took from me.
Little sorceress, Kyan said evenly. Shall I take care of this for you?
No, she said aloud. I can handle this.
The Fire Kindred's eyes narrowed.
Then handle it.
Jonas's grip on her tightened.
Timotheus gave this dagger to me. Told me it can destroy magic. Didn't think I'd need to use it on you. Yet here we are.
Lucia had gone very still. A dagger that could destroy magic. Right here, in this very room. And currently pressed murderously close to her throat by someone who had every right to want her dead. Chapter 32. Nick, Aranus. When Magnus arrived, a part of Nick held on to the hope that this prince, this former enemy, had a secret way of defeating Kyan and his siblings. He did. Nick just hadn't realized how much it would hurt. He remembered Magnus's hand clutching his throat as Kyan screamed internally at the cold wash of pain that crashed down upon them both. And then everything went black again for a while. The next thing he knew, he was opening his eyes and staring up at the face of Prince Asher Cortis. Relief filled the prince's gray blue eyes.
What happened? Nick managed to say.
You're alive. That's what happened,
Asher whispered.
This isn't a dream.
No. Not even close, but don't move, not yet.
Nick heard raised voices from close by. Lucia, Magnus, Jonas. They were arguing.
Wait. How is he speaking words right now? How is he having an actual conversation with Prince Asher if this wasn't an incredibly vivid dream?
Then he realized what had happened. Partially, anyway. Kyan had chosen a new vessel. That of Prince Magnus Demora himself. Through narrowed eyes, leaning against Asher for support, Nick watched the others. They paid him no attention at all. So engrossed were they in their argument. Jonas had a golden knife pressed to Lucia's throat, and then, before Nick's eyes, that knife was invisibly lifted from Jonas's grip. It floated in midair where Lucia snatched it.
"Thank you for bringing this to me," Lucia said, gazing at the sharp blade. "It will be very useful, I hope."
"Do you want to kill him, little sorceress?"
Magnus, no, Kyan, asked.
"Or should I?"
"Do you have a preference, Jonas?"
Lucia asked, slipping the golden dagger beneath the folds of her black robe.
"I mean, you did wander in here and threaten the life of a sorceress while observed by three elemental gods. Clearly you knew your death would be the result."
"Do whatever you have to do," he snarled.
"That is my current plan," she said.
Then she glanced at Kyan.
"I'll kill him myself later."
"Very well."
Kyan gestured toward Olivia. The Earth Kindred waved her hand, and thick green vines curled around Jonas's legs and torso, locking him into place.
"What do we do?"
Nick whispered.
"How can we help?"
"I don't know,"
Asher replied, his tone frustratingly calm.
"I fear there's nothing we can do. We may very well die here. And it's unfortunate, really. I had plans for us, you see."
"Plans? For us?"
"Yes.
Suddenly, something nearby caught Nick's eye. A small flash of gold. It was the ring Magnus had worn on his hand, the hand that had clutched his throat. Kyan had discarded it the moment he'd taken over. Now it lay 10 paces away from the kindred, who were currently and thankfully ignoring Nick and Asher's hushed conversation.
"What is that ring?" Nick asked.
"The ring Magnus wore."
"It's the Bloodstone ring," Asher whispered. "It's magic, death magic. It's what drove Kyan out of you."
"Death magic." Nick watched Kyan move around, stretching his long, muscular limbs, running his fingers through Magnus's thick, dark hair. Clearly, Kyan was happy with this change. Confident, hopeful, ready to claim victory over this scattering of mere mortals.
"I need to know something," Nick said, keeping his voice low.
"What?"
Asher asked.
"On the ship. When we were bound for Lemeros, you told me that you had a question for me. One you'd ask when everything was over. Do you remember?"
Asher was silent for a moment.
"I remember."
"What was the question?"
Asher exhaled slowly.
"I am not sure if it's appropriate anymore. Ask it anyway."
I wanted to ask if you would allow me the chance to steal you from the shores of Mitica. To show you more of the world."
Nick frowned.
"Really?"
Asher's expression shadowed.
"Silly, isn't it?"
"Yes. Very silly."
Nick sat up, turning so he could look directly into the prince's eyes.
"My answer would have been yes, by the way."
Asher's brows drew together.
"Would have been."
Nick grabbed Asher's face and brushed his lips against his.
"Apologies, but I have to do this."
Then he reached forward and took hold of the ring. Asher's eyes widened.
"Niccolo, no!"
On shaky legs, Nick rose to his feet and closed the distance between him and Kyan as swiftly as he could. Kyan turned to him with surprise.
"Well, look who's nicely recovered,"
the fire kindred sneered.
"Are you going to cause more problems for me?"
"I certainly hope so,"
Nick said. Then he grabbed Kyan's hand and thrust the ring back onto his left middle finger. He held on tight as Kyan burst into flames. Chapter 33. Magnus. Uranus. Magnus didn't enjoy admitting fault. Ever. But he'd made a horrible mistake. It was his last thought before the fire kindred stole his body. And then there was nothing but darkness. A darkness even more intense, more empty, and more bottomless than what he'd experienced in the grave. That Kyan had won had been the worst feeling ever. Worse than having his bones broken on Curtis's command. Worse than learning of his mother's murder. Worse than watching his sister slip away from him little by little, the tighter he tried to hold on to her. Worse than his father dying just as they'd begun to mend their broken relationship. But then, it was as if someone had reached into the darkness and grasped hold of him, pulling him back up to the surface. The bloodstone was back on his finger. Cold death magic mingled with fire and life, combusting, creating something new. It hurt. It hurt like being raked over burning coals. But he could think again. And he could move. It felt like he was coming up for air. His arms were on fire, but as soon as he realized that, the flames extinguished. Nick stared at him. His hand was red and blistered from the fire, but Magnus's skin was unblemished.
"Get back!" Magnus growled.
Nick did as he said, returning to Asher's side. Asher bound Nick's burned hand quickly in a torn piece of his shirt.
"Get the ring off your finger! Do it now, or I will destroy you!"
It took Magnus a moment to realize it was Kyan who snarled this. Kyan's voice inside Magnus's head. Magnus grimaced as he swept his gaze through the throne room. Everyone watched him with different expressions on their faces. Lucia with dread. Jonas, bound by vines, who must have foolishly shown up just minutes ago, with disdain. The look on Cleo's face nearly undid him. Pain mixed with fury. Her golden hair was a tangled mess, wild and free. The blue lines on her face and arms were still as disturbing as ever. But she'd never been more beautiful to him.
"I hate you,"
Cleo hissed at him as he held her gaze. He drew closer to her. She stiffened but didn't stagger back from him.
"I'm sorry to hear that, Cleona," he said softly. "Since I feel very differently toward you."
Her blue-green eyes widened a fraction at the use of her full name, and she drew in a sharp breath. It had become their signal when he used her full name. She now knew the truth that no one else did. Magnus was in control of his body, but he didn't know how long it would last. Taryn and Olivia studied Magnus carefully.
"Are you well?"
Olivia asked.
"I'm very well,"
Magnus said smoothly, knowing it would be best if they didn't realize what had happened.
"Everything is under control."
"A bigger lie has never been spoken in history,"
he thought.
"I will kill your niece,"
Kyan hissed from inside him.
"I will burn her until she's nothing but ashes."
Magnus leveled his gaze at Olivia.
"Fetch the child."
She cocked her head.
"Child?"
"Lyssa, bring her here immediately."
Olivia exchanged a look with Taryn.
"That's not possible." "What?"
Lucia exclaimed.
"What are you talking about? Why isn't it possible?"
"Princess!"
Nick shouted at Lucia.
"Cleo's right. Kyan didn't kidnap Lyssa. They never discussed her. I never saw her. I don't know where your daughter is, but she's not with them."
Taryn flicked his hand, and Nick went flying backward, hitting a column hard enough that Magnus heard the far too familiar sound of breaking bones. But when Asher moved to his side, Magnus saw that Nick still moved. That boy was definitely resilient. Magnus had to admire him for that. The bloodstone hadn't stopped hurting him for one moment. It was like his hand was on fire, the searing pain sinking deep into his bones. But he didn't dare take it off his finger. Lucia had a blade in her hand, a golden dagger Magnus hadn't seen before. She raised it up.
"Do you know what this is?"
she asked. Magnus shook his head. Olivia and Taryn came to his sides, but both their gazes were fixed on Lucia.
"Sorceress," Olivia said gently. "I think you need to use a different blade. That one could be problematic."
Lucia raised her chin, her gaze now filled with raw maliciousness.
"I'm hoping it will be, actually. I'm hoping it's incredibly problematic for you."
"Stop your stupid sister from whatever she's thinking of doing," Kyan growled, "or I will burn everything you've ever cared for."
"Quiet,"
Magnus muttered.
"Lucia is speaking."
"What did you say?"
Taryn asked.
"Nothing. Nothing, just enjoying the show."
Magnus gestured toward his sister.
"Lucia, will you be getting on with the ritual? Time grows short."
Her bleak gaze met his. But there was no recognition there. She still didn't see him past the threat of Kyan.
"I wanted to find another way,"
she said as she drew the edge of the golden blade across her palm, then dripped her blood onto each of the crystal orbs.
"But there's no choice. I don't know if this will work or if it will kill you."
Her voice broke off.
"Magnus, I'm sorry. If I'd never been born, none of this would be happening."
"Don't say that," Magnus said firmly. "You have been a gift from the moment you came into my life. Never forget that."
Their eyes met and held, and...
yes.
There it was. Tears spilled down her cheeks. She knew it was him.
"Stop her!"
Kyan yelled from within Magnus.
"I demand that you stop her! I was meant to be free, free with my siblings! I was meant to rule this world, to reform it however I saw fit! You can't stop that. I am fire. I am magic. And you will burn.
The orbs had begun to glow brighter, like tiny suns.
Do it, sister, Magnus said,
steeling himself, since he knew very well how badly this could end for him.
Whatever you feel you need to do to end this, do it right now.
What is happening? Taran said, moving forward.
This isn't right. This isn't the ritual.
No, Lucia said, shaking her head. It definitely isn't. Lucia raised the blade above her head and brought it down hard over the obsidian orb. Olivia screamed. Taran was closing the distance between him and Lucia as swiftly as a hurricane, but not before she shattered the moonstone with the dagger's tip. He froze in place, as if he'd hit an invisible barrier, his knees buckling from under him. Magnus grabbed hold of Cleo's hand, pulling her against his side.
Do it!
Cleo yelled. Lucia destroyed the aquamarine orb, and Cleo's grip on Magnus's hand became painfully tight as she cried out.
What are you waiting for? Magnus roared. End this!
The amber orb shattered on contact. Magnus felt something hit him, something solid and sharp and painful. It felt like his flesh was being torn from his bones. He tried to see through the pain, toward Lucia at the table. She looked down at the broken pieces of the kindred orbs. They were still glowing, brighter and brighter, until their light began to obliterate her from his view.
Move, Lucia,
he thought frantically.
Get away from them!
But she stood frozen in place, as if unable to move away from the magic that was going to explode and surely destroy them all in the process. A moment before his vision went stark white, he saw a shadow. Jonas, free from his vines, leaping toward Lucia and knocking her out of the way just as a thick column of light shot up from the shattered orbs. Light, too, shot out of Magnus's eyes, his mouth, his hands. He couldn't see, couldn't think, but he could feel. Cleo's hand still gripped his.
Don't you dare let go of me!
He roared at her, past the deafening whooshing sound sweeping through the throne room. A windstorm enveloped them, threatening to carry them away. A violent earthquake shook the ground beneath their feet.
The others!
Cleo screamed. Yes, the others. Magnus searched the chaos surrounding him until he saw Olivia. She held on to Taran like he held on to Cleo. He reached toward her, and she grabbed hold of his hand. Cleo did the same with Taran. Taran's nose was bleeding, and his face was bruised and bloody. Olivia's gaze was wild, fearful, but still fierce and ready to fight. Chunks of marble fell from the destroyed ceiling, narrowly missing them as the wind swirled around and the floor nearby split wide open.
I'm sorry,
Olivia yelled, but it was barely audible above the sound of the elemental storm surging around them.
None of this is your fault,
Cleo replied. Magnus would like to argue that this was in part Olivia's fault, but there was no time.
Bloody weak,
Taran growled.
I should have fought harder.
Yes, you should have,
Magnus said.
But you're still here.
Just in time for us all to die.
A monstrous burst of fire erupted in front of Magnus. He jumped back as the fire grew. He could feel its heat searing his skin.
No,
Magnus growled.
I didn't survive this long to give up now.
Your sister is helping them.
Taran hurled back at him, his words nearly stolen completely by a series of swirling tornadoes that circled them. Magnus eyed them uneasily, knowing each one could tear them apart if they got too close. They should have been torn apart by now, by all of this, but they weren't. Not yet.
My sister, in case you're incapable of understanding this,
Magnus said without a single doubt in the world,
is helping us.
Lucia would save the world. Why had Magnus doubted her for even a moment? He was such a fool. He lost his grip on Olivia's hand, and she flew backward from him.
No!
He yelled. Cleo squeezed his hand hard, and he looked at her, nearly blind from the beam of destructive light that had torn the throne room apart. Taran was nowhere to be seen.
Forever,
she said, tears streaking her face.
Whatever happens, you and me are together forever, all right?
You and me,
he agreed.
Until eternity.
I love you, Cleo. I love you, Magnus.
He'd never heard more beautiful words in his entire life. Cleo buried her face in his chest, and he wrapped his arms tightly around her, refusing to ever let go of her, no matter what happened. The light grew brighter and brighter. The wind howled. The fire burned. The earth itself shook and shattered beneath their feet. And then it was all over. Chapter 34. Jonas. Uranus. It felt as if the Forbidden Mountains themselves had crashed down on top of him. The throne room was in ruin. Light from the sky shone down onto Jonas, brightening the remains of what had once been the Golden Palace. He tried to turn his head to see who was there, who was hurt or dead, but the pain made him scream.
"Hold still, you fool," Lucia said. "You have a broken neck." "Broken neck," he managed. Nick is hurt. Worse than me. Help him first. I already did," Lucia told him. Asher insisted. "He'll be fine. Now stay still and be quiet so I can heal you."
She placed her hands on his neck, and a burning sensation made him yelp as it sank deep into his throat, his spine, so intense he thought he might pass out from it. And then the pain was gone. Lucia looked down at him.
"You healed me," he said weakly. "Of course I did. I mean, it's your elementia I'm currently using."
He blinked.
"I was dead. I hear you've been dead a lot."
"I think this is my third time. Or second and a half, anyway."
"It's the least I could do after..."
Lucia drew in a shaky breath.
"I'm sorry for what I did. At the time, I felt I had no choice."
Jonas touched her face, brushing the dark hair off her forehead.
"Of course I forgive you."
She stared down at him with surprise.
"That easily?"
He grinned.
"Sure. Not everything has to be a struggle. Not today, anyway." "I still don't know where my daughter is," Lucia said, her voice breaking.
Jonas took her hands in his.
"We'll find her. Wherever she is, however long it takes, we will find her together."
She nodded.
"Thank you. You just saved every one of our arses with that stolen magic. And that dagger."
Jonas strained to see the altar where the orbs had been, but there was nothing left, only a black scorch mark. Lucia shook her head.
"The dagger vanished, along with every last piece of the crystal orbs." "Good riddance."
Jonas pulled her gently against him, and she let out a shuddery sigh of relief.
"I'm glad Kyan's gone," she whispered. "But part of me really liked him in the beginning." "I'm sure part of him was worth liking. A very small flicker of likability."
Jonas finally and reluctantly released her. He rubbed his neck, which felt as good as new, then gazed around at the shattered remains of the throne room. A hand appeared before his face then, a hand attached to the arm of Magnus de Mora. Jonas grabbed it, and Magnus helped him to his feet. He'd seen light explode from Magnus, Cleo, Taryn, and Olivia, just as it had exploded from the kindred orbs. Anything with the power to punch a hole in a marble roof could easily have torn apart a mortal body. But it hadn't.
"You're alive," Jonas managed.
"I am."
Jonas blinked.
"Good. I mean, yes. Glad you're not dead and all that."
"Likewise." Magnus hesitated. "I saw you protect my sister. You have my eternal gratitude for that."
It was all a blur now. The vines that had held him immobile had fallen away as soon as Lucia had crushed the orbs. He remembered her standing over them, the golden dagger in her hand, frozen in place. Had she remained there, he doubted she would have survived that blast. Jonas looked at Magnus.
It seems your sister needs protecting sometimes.
She'd disagree with that, Magnus replied.
I'm right here, Lucia said, pushing herself up to her feet to give her brother a tight hug. I can hear you.
Cleo came to Magnus's side, accompanied by Taryn and Olivia. The sight of the three of them, free from the monsters that had used their bodies, made Jonas's throat tighten.
You're all right. All of you.
Olivia nodded.
I don't remember much at all, to tell you the truth.
She gazed around the room at the moss and vines.
But it seems like I was quite busy.
I tried so hard not to let the air kindred take me over, Taryn said. That loss of control, it was worse than death for me. But I'm back. And my life? It's going to be different now.
How?
Jonas asked. Taryn frowned.
Not sure yet. I'm still working on that.
Lucia embraced Cleo, gripping her tightly.
If you hadn't told me about the orbs.
Cleo hugged Lucia back.
We have Nick to thank for that.
Jonas glanced to the other side of the throne room, where Nick and Asher were speaking together in hushed tones.
We survived, he said with shock. We all survived.
Lucia's eyes were glossy.
I hurt you, Jonas. I lied to you. I manipulated you. And I almost killed you. And you're still willing to forgive me? I can't understand it.
Jonas grinned.
I guess you're lucky I'm fond of complicated women.
Magnus cleared his throat loudly.
Anyway, we will immediately start a kingdom-wide search for my niece, including a reward no one will be able to resist.
Thank you, Magnus,
Lucia whispered. She hadn't let go of Jonas's hand.
This girl would probably be the death of me,
he thought with wry amusement. But not today. Chapter 35. Amara. Cretia. 1 month later. Amara endured the uncomfortable, rocky ride in the back of the enclosed wagon that would take her to a locked room where she would spend the better part of her life away from anyone she might try to hurt. Her grandmother had made sure to document everything she'd done, with the very same Grand Augur who had almost completed Amara's ascension ceremony as her witness. She'd signed away Amara's life. Mila's accounts of her granddaughter's descent into madness would take everything away from her. She was now known as a girl who'd murdered her loving family in the relentless pursuit of power. The most amusing part of it all was that Amara couldn't argue with any of her grandmother's claims, since every single one of them was true. But she was still alive. The rebels who'd attacked the ceremony hall had successfully rescued their leader, but their numbers were far too few to take control of the Emerald Spear or the city surrounding it. For now, the Grand Augur would rule, which, quite frankly, annoyed her, because the man didn't have a single original thought in his idiotic head. At the moment, however, she couldn't concern herself with power. She was more concerned with escape. Unfortunately, with her ankles and wrists chained, and the back of the wagon locked up tight after her last attempt to break free from her captors, that didn't seem remotely possible. Very well. She would go to the madhouse. She would play along and behave herself and, well, very likely seduce a guard who would eventually help her escape. For now, however, she had to be patient. But patience had never been an easy task for Amara Cortis. After the incessant jerking motion of the wagon became so unbearable she wanted to scream, the vehicle came to an abrupt halt. She heard indiscernible shouting, a clashing of metal, and finally, a frightening silence. Amara couldn't see a thing. could only imagine 1,000 possibilities of what had just happened, none of which ended well for her. She waited, tensely, a line of perspiration trickling down her spine, as the sound of footsteps moved around to the back of the wagon. The latch clicked, and then the door swung wide open. Sunlight streamed into the darkness of Amara's temporary prison. She blocked the blinding brightness with her hand until she could register who stood right in front of her.
"Nerissa," she whispered.
The girl's dark hair had grown a little since the last time Amara had seen her. It was now long enough to tuck behind her ears. She wore black trousers and a dark green tunic, and she carried a sword.
"Well,"
Nerissa said, as she sheathed the weapon at her waist.
"Are you going to look at me like an absolute fool, or are you going to get out of there before your guards wake up from the knocks they just took to their heads?"
Amara stared at the girl in disbelief.
"Are you here to kill me?"
Nerissa raised a brow.
"If I were, you'd already be dead."
Perhaps this was only a dream. It had to be a dream. Or a hallucination of some kind from the heat and claustrophobia.
"You should have returned to Midika weeks ago, with Felix and Lissa." "I did return. You don't honestly think I would leave Felix Gabrus all alone with a baby, do you? He wouldn't have had the first clue what to do with her, even without his seasickness to contend with."
This was happening, Amara realized. It wasn't just a dream.
"You went home, and now you're back." "Midika was never my home. Just a brief stop on my journey. One I certainly enjoyed for a time."
She jumped up into the back of the wagon and, with the key in her grip, unlocked Amara's chains.
"In case you're still confused about all this, I'm rescuing you."
Amara shook her head.
"I don't deserve rescue." "I deserve escape," she thought, "and continued survival. But certainly not rescue by outside forces."
Nerissa leaned her shoulder against the side of the wagon as Amara rubbed her sore wrists and tried to stand up. Her leg had mostly healed, but she still had a limp. Perhaps she always would.
"We all deserve to be rescued," Nerissa said simply. "Some of us take longer to realize it than others."
Amara stepped down into the daylight, again shielding her eyes from the sun. They hadn't made it very far. They were almost at the docks, the silver sea just a stone's throw away. She looked around at the unconscious guards, realizing that Nerissa wasn't alone. She was with 3 other rebels, including Micah. Her breath caught at the sight of him. Micah gestured at Amara with the tip of his dagger.
"I know you told Nerissa and Felix about me. And if you didn't, I'd be dead. But know this. If you show your face in the jewel after today, it's over. You're not welcome here anymore."
Amara pressed her lips together and nodded, resisting the urge to speak. She could only make this worse by trying to explain herself. Micah didn't wait. He and the other 2 rebels walked away without looking back.
"I don't think organizing my rescue won you any friends," Amara said.
Nerissa shrugged.
"I'm fine with that. Come, let's walk along the shore. I have a ship waiting for us at the docks so we can leave this place far behind us."
Amara followed her, her limp even more pronounced once they walked along the sandy beach.
"Why did you do this for me?" "Because everyone deserves a second chance."
Nerissa cast a look at the white beach and blue ocean that spread out before them.
"Besides, the dust has settled in Midika. Cayenne and his siblings were defeated. Their magic returned to..."
She shook her head, frowning.
"Lucia explained it to me, but I still don't really understand it. The magic is everywhere now. It's spread out... in everyone and everything, where it always belonged, and where it can do no more harm."
Amara felt a knot in her stomach loosen. Cayenne was gone. the world was safe again.
"I'm glad,"
she said, her voice barely audible.
"I was happy to have